top five anything just gives me anxiety, to be very honest with you.
Yeah.
That I'm like,
what's up, list nerds? Welcome to this Force 5 mini episode. I am your host, Jason Kleberg. On today's show, we're going to talk about what video games Joey Clift and I missed on last week's show, which was top 5 video games that need film adaptations. We'll talk a little bit about the Oscars real quick. I'll give you a glimpse into Disneyland After Darks. And then I'm going to close out with a review of the newest Coen brother film, Drive Away Dolls, directed and co-written by Ethan Coen. Comedian, writer, cat lover Joey Clift was on last week and got us all thinking about what video games should be turned into silver screen fare. But we are, of course, limited to 5 choices on this show, and there are so many video games out there that need adaptations, and the internet, of course, was ready to let us know what we missed.
Not in the top 5, did they get it right?
Excuse my language.
Okay.
Hell no! Can't believe who made that list? Who made that? That's blasphemous.
Don't look at me.
That's blasphemous.
Over on Twitter, 1999, the podcast said, Perfect Dark with Emily Blunt. I want this so bad. Yeah, that's a great pairing. That's a great call. She would be amazing in that role. Carlo, my homie from the movie Loot, said, Legend of Zelda, Metroid, and Metal Gear. Daniel Hood gave us 4 options here. Zombies Ate My Neighbors. That's a throwback. I remember that game. Splatterhouse 2, Manhunt, and Shadow of the Colossus. Shadow of the Colossus would be amazing. At Perpetual Cinema had a couple of options. Tales of Iron, Comic Zone. I remember that one for the Sega Genesis. That was really fun. And Psychonauts. Director Ben Burghardt said Anticipation for the Nintendo Entertainment System. Look, I don't know how that would be made into a film, but I'd say do it. Take a shot at it. Party Fun for All Ages, Nintendo's first video board game. I remember playing that at my grandma's house when I was younger. KMS78 said The Goonies 2. Cinematic's very own Eric Holmes, who I got something cooking with right now, said Contra, starring Scott Adkins and Michael Jai White, directed by James Nunn. That would be freaking sweet. Over on Reddit, Diabetic8 said Elden Ring or Dark Souls. Elden Ring would be great as a show, seems too much to cram into one movie, but maybe a trilogy or something. Character could be plagued by nightmares of dying in battle, waking up next to a bonfire. Look, Elden Ring is one of my favorite games of all time now at this point. I have no idea how that would be turned into a show or a movie, but if somebody takes a crack at it, I'm probably going to watch it. Sardothian12 said Beyond Two Souls. I'm New and Old Again said Medieval. Blueset said I'd watch the crap out of an Infamous movie. Biting Chaos said if it told the exact story from the game, I really wanted to watch a Horizon Zero Dawn movie on the big screen with my wife so that she could see everything instead of me trying to explain it to her. And finally, C.D. Howard said Soul Reaver. Thanks for all your suggestions. If you want your comment read on the show, I post this on Twitter, I post it on the Cinematics Facebook page, sometimes I post it on Reddit, and all you gotta do is reply to those, and your comment might be read on the show. Okay, the Academy Awards show. It was not terrible this year, which I think speaks to how bad the past years have been. It started a few hours earlier, it ended definitely a lot earlier, and it had some really nice moments. I think the only thing that I thought was outright terrible, unfortunately, was Al Pacino announcing Best Picture. I don't know what happened, but it was weird. It sounded like somebody missed a cue or something. He just kind of got up there, clumsily opened the envelope, and then said, I see Oppenheimer. It was really, it was so weird. But anyway, this show's about good stuff. So here's my top 5 moments of the night in no particular order, and I'm going to fly through these real quick. At number 5, John Cena announcing the nominees for Best Costumes. I thought that was gold. I do think they missed a great opportunity for a better gag with the envelope he was holding. Like, what if, you know, he had like a really long envelope hiding his junk. Thought that would have been funny, but John Cena, always a joy to see, especially when he's doing comedy. At number 4, I have Divine Joy Randolph winning Best Supporting Actress. Definitely deserved. I loved her in The Holdovers. I thought she was fantastic. Her moment with Paul Giamatti was great. Just a really good vibe to start the show off. At number 3, I've got Robert Downey Jr. winning Best Supporting Actor. I'm a huge fan of his. I think he's a great comeback story. His speech was really funny. He oozed charisma up there. Just a great moment overall. Number two, John Mulaney's read for the sound categories. I thought it was straight up hilarious. He started going off on a tangent of the plot of Field of Dreams. It was totally a John Mulaney thing, and it worked for me. He never missed a beat, and I think it would be amazing if he hosted the Oscars next year. I do like Jimmy Kimmel, but let's give the man a rest for a year. And of course, number one, and I think this is going to be most people's number one for those who watch the show, Ryan Gosling performing I'm Just Ken. It was really fun, it was very energetic, and I'm sure it's why a lot of people sat down to watch it in the first place. As for the winners, I don't give a shit about the winners. I mean, the Oscars doesn't normally speak to my taste, so a lot of the films that I liked weren't even mentioned, but you know what? I'm happy for those that won, and for those who were nominated, it's still a really cool feather in the cap. So it's something I'm always going to watch, but I'm not going to take a whole lot of stock in who the winners and the losers were. It's a real, it's a publicity show. It's something that you lobby for, and a lot of really great movies get skipped. All right, before we get into our review, I want to talk a little bit about Disneyland's After Dark events. So my wife and I went to our very first Disneyland After Dark event. It was a Disney Channel theme. Now, Disney describes these as a festive evening that includes Disneyland Park After Hours Park admission, featuring themed entertainment, characters, attractions, and more. Each separately ticketed, special themed soiree begins after the park closes to the general public and includes admission to Disneyland Park 3 hours before the party begins. So essentially what these are is you buy a separate ticket for this. I think it's like $130 a ticket, and they kick everybody out of the park early who had like a, you know, you show up at 8 a.m. or whatever. Well, on this day, the park closes at, I don't know, 7 o'clock or something like that. So they get everybody out of there, and then they have these separate tickets for 9 o'clock. It runs from 9 o'clock at night until 1 a.m. So we went to the Disney Channel night. It ran for 2 nights, featured a lot of exclusives for photo opportunities. They had like really weird, interesting foods, and they had a parade that you wouldn't normally see. So in this case, the parade was from High School Musical, and they had the zombies and the high school, whatever the high school is from High School Musical, the wolves or something. And they had this like cool little parade that came down Main Street. And then they had really interesting food things, which, by the way, made me realize that I am now all of a sudden allergic to pineapple, but that's another story for another day. I had a linguica on top of a Hawaiian roll bun with macaroni salad, teriyaki, and pineapple on top. So, I mean, it doesn't sound like it would work, but it was actually pretty good. They also had, they have these, you know, if you've ever been to Disneyland, they have these amazing corn dogs. They had an elote corn dog with like kind of Mexican themed corn on top. That one wasn't great. It did have a lot of photo ops, but here's the thing. A lot of people stood in line for those photo ops, and we didn't get to do a lot of those photo opportunities because it was just going to take too long. For example, there was like an ears thing that you would use your, they give you a light stick and you would use that as a wand. And the line for that thing was like 1.5 hours long. So if you wanted to do that, you kind of screwed yourself out of seeing a lot of other cool things and eating cool foods. Now, this was neat. I don't know that I would go to do it for the photo ops just because there were a lot of photo opportunities, but really long lines to do them. And the food was good, but I think the real highlight of these is getting to go to the park when there's really no lines for anything because everybody's out of that park except for people who paid for these tickets. And a lot of people are standing in line for these photo ops. So you can easily go on, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean, no line, which I think is the appeal. So personally, I don't know. I guess it's fun. It's something that you can say you did, but I don't know that you get a whole lot more for your money if you're going to do the photo ops. I think if you're going to take advantage of the cool atmosphere and the cool costumes and characters that you might not normally see, and then you can get on some cool rides without waiting in line. I think that's kind of the appeal of this. The next one's up. You got Star Wars doing a couple of Star Wars nights in April. I'm sure those are going to be packed. And then they have Pride Night in June. So, oh, I will also mention they do say that they have themed merchandise that's only available at these events. And the stuff that we saw was actually really terrible. We did walk away with like an ornament for our Christmas tree. We always get an ornament for the Christmas tree when we go to Disney, but the shirts, I've seen better shirts on Etsy. They just weren't really appealing merchandise opportunities. So keep that in mind as you go. Anyway, that's Disneyland's After Dark events. I think if I was to rate something like that on Letterboxd, it'd have been like 2.5 stars. Okay, Drive-Away Dolls. Actually, you know what? Before I talk about Drive-Away Dolls, I also saw Dune Part 2 in IMAX. It is amazing. I'm not going to do a full review of Dune 2 because I can't really say anything other than what critics are talking about already. Epic scale, amazing visuals, engrossing story, terrific performances, incredible sound. Go check it out. I promise Dune 2 will be one of the best things you see in the theater in 2024. All right, Drive Away Dolls. The Coen brothers are some of my favorite directors ever. Fargo, top 10 of all time. No Country for Old Men, definitely up there. These guys just have a knack for writing really lived-in worlds with eccentric characters that you remember. When the brothers decided to start directing in their own lanes, Joel Coen presented The Tragedy of Macbeth, a Shakespeare adaptation that snagged 3 Oscar nominations, including both cinematography and Best Actor for Denzel Washington. It was certainly a departure from what I've known the Coen brothers for, a more wacky, less serious landscape. Well, don't worry, Ethan Coen certainly made up for the lack of weirdness in that one with his first solo foray, Drive Away Dolls.
I saw this movie once where they come across this box, and they open the box.
The case.
And it was, like, really, really bad.
I just want to know what's going on.
I bet it's locked.
I just want to locate your friends.
Who are you, jackass?
That's when women curse like that.
Those girls just drove off with something we need.
We gotta call the cops.
Cool your jets. Here's what we do.
Sell it back. Shake them down.
That is about the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And I'm a cop.
Yeah, baby.
Who are you?
Save the sanctimony.
And hand over the million smackers.
We should see what's in here.
Drive Away Dolls tells the tale of two lesbians who set off on a road trip from Philadelphia to Tallahassee. Marion, played by Geraldine Viswanathan, just wants to get down to see her aunt for some birdwatching, while Jamie, played by Margaret Qualley, has nowhere to go after a breakup with her girlfriend Suki. In order to get down to Florida, they go to a drive-away service, which specializes in car transport. Basically, they have a car that needs to go to a certain city, so you can take it there. A free ride minus gas and expenses. Not a bad deal if you don't have a car and they have one that's going where you're headed. Little do the girls know that buried in that car that needs to go to Tallahassee is an important suitcase. No, that car was not meant for them. A mysterious middleman named the Chief is not happy with the mix-up, so he sends 2 goons, played by CJ Wilson and Joey Slotnick, after the girls. On paper, Drive Away Dolls feels like something made for me. It's a Coen film. Zany cameos, out-of-place accents, repartee between 2 hard-headed mob goons. It's extremely horny, it's super seedy, and it stars 2 lesbians. What's not to like? Regardless of how these elements came together in the script, I'm devastated to say that absolutely none of it gelled on screen for me. I thought this movie was so poorly executed that I nearly walked out of the theater about 20 minutes in, and I know that if I was watching this on a streaming service, I would have turned it off. This did not feel like a Coen film. In fact, it felt more like Russ Meyer had come to the future from the late 60s, saw a Coen Brothers film, and tried his best to emulate it, shitty Super Vixens transitions and all. I take no pleasure in tearing a movie apart, so I'm going to focus on some critical things that made me feel disappointed, the first being the recycling of Coen prototypes. Margaret Qualley's performance as Jamie is perhaps the most polarizing when you read reviews online. I do think it's important to note that I'm not criticizing Miss Qualley's acting skills because I think she's great, normally. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, The Leftovers, The Nice Guys. She's got a ton of talent and has shown that in a ton of great roles. I think her performance here falls squarely on the shoulders of the director. Now, like I said, some people really loved her in this movie and refer to her as the engine, the energy that the film needs. And there's no denying that she's got energy, but her acting feels so over the top, so cartoonish, and so annoying, it feels as if Ethan tried to capture the lightning in a bottle that was H.I. McDonough, played by Nick Cage in their 1987 film Raising Arizona, with a little bit of Cameron Poe from Con Air, and then had her crank that to 11, and that just did not work for me at all. I also felt like the relationship between the hitmen was a knockoff of Carl and Gare in Fargo. It felt inauthentic. It felt forced. I never cared about either one of them. There were a few people hitting the right tone, in my opinion. The first, Bill Camp as Curly, the man who runs the driveway place. He was great in a few scenes, whether he was being annoyed by the girls or harassed by the goons. Beanie Feldstein, who's in this movie, also really did it for me as Suki. I thought she was hilarious. However, Ethan Coen just kind of put a dog into the mix between Suki and Jamie that was supposed to be funny, and it just wasn't. And that's another issue. This film is not funny. One of the best things about a Coen Brothers thriller is that there are moments of comedy sprinkled in to ease the tension. Sometimes it's slapstick, sometimes it's situational, sometimes it's through dialogue, but they tend to work for me more often than not. Not here, though, which I guess is fine since there's no tension that needs to be cut either. Now, spoilers come in here, so if you haven't seen Driveway Dolls and you absolutely have to, go ahead and pause here or go ahead 30 seconds, because I've got to talk about the MacGuffin, the contents of the case, because, hey, I can't get critical without talking about the plot, how it absolutely falls apart here. As we come to find out, the case contains 5 dildos that are molds of celebrities' dicks, captured by a woman named Tiffany Plastercaster. One of those dildos is modeled after the dick of a conservative Florida senator, Gary Channel, taken when he was a college student on LSD. So you're expecting the audience to believe that, in 1999, this would be something that a United States senator would be willing to kill for? Maybe. I mean, it's, what are we coming out of the Bill Clinton years here? I don't know. It seems like in the 90s, this is something that you could just deny, especially considering there's no name on the dildo. It could have been the dick of anybody. It feels like Ethan Coen just came up with the line, "You're a day late and a dick short," and then wrote a screenplay around that. The problem was, it's not interesting, it's not funny, and it didn't make a whole lot of sense. Now, I could go on and on and on about how the chemistry of the leads was non-existent and I didn't buy their love story, how despite some impressive imagery sprinkled within, like the champagne glass on the nightstand, the movie looked poorly made, and how cameos by Pedro Pascal, Matt Damon, and Miley Cyrus were completely wasted, but I feel like that would be just dragging things out. So far, Drive Away Dolls is the worst film I've seen in 2024, and it isn't even close. I rated Drive Away Dolls 1.5 stars on Letterboxd. Now, there are dissenting opinions on here, and if you want to hear people discuss this in a way that completely disagrees with me, go and check out the film cast. There's 3 guys on there, Dave Chen, Devendra Hardwar, Jeff Cannata, and they all like this film a whole lot. So don't take my word for it. If you're interested in this movie, I say go see it. Come up with your own opinion. You've already listened to my opinion. You can also listen to theirs if you want to. They had a good time with it. And speaking of the film cast, make sure to join me next week when film cast member Devendra Hardwar joins me to talk top 5 city set car chases.